On today's podcast, I'll tell you where to find pitching value where a lot of people won't look. Plus, I'll share my interview with White Sox reporter Scott Merkin. That's today on Fastball Fantasy Baseball. I'm Taylor Tarter, and this is Fastball Fantasy Baseball. Let's get into it. So there have been two signings that I think a lot of people will kind of look past and not see value in. And those are the San Francisco Giants signing Anthony DeSclafani and John Brebbia. Now I want to look at these signings in the bigger picture of the entire Giants pitching staff. And, you know, I'll go over why exactly, but I see them as a really underrated pitching staff. So it's been kind of obvious the last few years that the Orioles have really struggled with grooming their homegrown pitchers. Both Dylan Bundy and Kevin Gausman have excelled away from Baltimore. And people might think that, you know, Johnny Cueto, the big contract, he's the ace, he's the guy on the Giants, you know, pitching staff. But in my mind, Gausman is really the anchor there. Looking at what he did last year, you can see tangible improvements from what he had been doing in years past. For example, he allowed fewer walks, he allowed fewer home runs, he stranded more batters on base, he induced more ground balls, and he did all that all while sporting a manageable BABIP and home run to fly ball ratio, meaning it wasn't a fluke, it wasn't bad luck, or good luck, rather. It was things that he was doing to create better stats, better ratios. So per a website called Baseball Savant that really, really looks into these underlying metrics, you can see exactly what he did to improve. So he increased the spin rate, which is, you know, the rotation of the baseball as it's approaching home plate. He increased the spin rate on basically all of his pitches. And because of that, he saw an increase in swings and misses on three out of the four pitches in his arsenal. A higher use of his splitter and sinker also helped him out last year. And that's coaching. That's the pitching coach telling him, here are some things that you can do to get better. Why don't we use this a little more? Use this pitch a little more, use this one a little less. And so basically the reason I'm bringing this up is to show you that one, Gausman is legit, right? His 2020 wasn't a fluke. He should absolutely be on your radar. And then another reason I'm bringing this up about Gausman is to say that I expect an improvement from Anthony DeSclafani after a really bad year in 2020. It was his worst year by far. And so, you know, he might come off as a bad pitcher. He doesn't have this huge name attached to him. He never had huge, huge prospects. But, yeah, I think he should be closer to at least an above average to good pitcher in 2021. He's a solid pitcher. He's been a solid pitcher. And I think he can be a solid pitcher for the Giants. He was basically the exact opposite of Gausman last year. His velocity was down on nearly every pitch. His spin rate was down on nearly every pitch. And you could see that it led to a dip in strikeouts. It led to an increase in walks and home runs. And so I think despite his 2020, DeSclafani could be a really sneaky pick in deeper leagues and someone to put on your watch list in shallower leagues. I see, you know, because of what we've seen out of Gausman's development, you know, I can reasonably assume that we're going to see DeSclafani develop a little bit too. I think he should improve and could improve significantly in San Francisco in 2021. Now, as far as the bullpen, the Giants had five pitchers earn saves last season, and nobody looked great. I think adding John Brebbia, who is way under the radar but is really good, is a sign they're looking for somebody to close out games. I think the three likely candidates to get saves for the Giants in 2021 are Tyler Rogers, who did get saves in 2020, Reyes Moronta, and John Brebbia. Now, Brebbia is out with an elbow injury. He's recovering from Tommy John, and he probably won't see the mound until midseason, and that's if we start on time. But he's averaged 10 strikeouts per nine over his career with the Cardinals. He strands a lot of base runners, and he's shown the ability to limit walks and home runs. I think he's somebody to keep an eye on, to keep on your radar for next year. The closer role in that bullpen is not settled. And you don't sign a guy like that who's injured, you know is injured. You don't sign a guy like that unless you're seriously intent on using them when they're healthy. And so I think you got two really under the radar valuable signings there for the Giants. Many of the biggest free agents still remain on the board. MLB insider Jeff Passan expects the top four free agents, Realmuto, LeMahieu, Springer, and Bauer, to remain free agents into the new year. So don't get excited about those guys signing anytime soon. He also thinks that the most likely teams to spend big this season are the Blue Jays and the Mets, but we could see the Nationals, Red Sox, Twins, Braves, and Dodgers still be aggressive in free agency, just maybe not offering huge deals to some of the biggest names. There's still a lot of, really good relievers on the board. Hendricks, Hand, and Yates. Nelson Cruz is out there and is valuable. And then all three of the top outfielders are still out there. George Springer, Michael Brantley, and Marcell Ozuna. So let's look into a couple of rumors surrounding some of these players and a few others. New on the rumor mill this week is that the Reds are shopping not only Sonny Gray, but also Luis Castillo. And to me, I just don't get it. I don't get it. They're selling off so many pieces, so much talent. And, you know, I get that a lot of owners are going to be fiscally conservative this year. A lot of owners lost money last season. But the Reds have such a solid core of young players on team-friendly deals, and I just don't get why they're selling these guys off. I understand kind of the Rezel Iglesias, he's a little older, big deal, right? He's got a big contract, trade that away, but it's just surprising to me to hear so many rumors about players like Sonny Gray and Luis Castillo. I think the Reds could compete if they kept those pieces. And on the other side, if either player moves, they are going to get a huge haul in return. Gray and Castillo are both on team-friendly deals. They'd be a number one or a number two pitcher in most rotations. And rumors are that the Padres are very interested in Gray, and that would be huge for them. He would be a huge help in getting them closer to competing with the Dodgers. They have a couple prospects that might see time in 2021, and they've already got a lot of talent on the pitching end, and that would just add to it. Another Reds related trade rumor is that the Nationals have been asking about Eugenio Suarez. John Heyman reports that nothing is imminent, that a deal is not close, but I think the fact that we're seeing in the public sphere that these two teams are talking, it's interesting. And, you know, maybe if the Nationals don't acquire him, somebody else will. But I think the Nats are going to be aggressive in trying to restock. I think the assumption was, you know, they went into 2020 knowing it was going to be a weird year, knowing they weren't going to have all their pieces there, and kind of punted a little bit. And so I think the expectation in the front office is that they're going to retool. They already have so many pieces to start with. And so I think that for 2021, the idea is retool, restock, and contend. So I think a Suarez signing would improve things for sure for the Nationals. He's an excellent hitter. He would improve things for Soto and Turner, even more. I think he would make them better, having a solid bat behind them. He'd likely protect Soto in the lineup. It would make it really difficult for pitchers to pitch around Soto next year. And so if this deal ends up happening, I could see an uptick in productivity for anyone batting in the top five spots in the Nationals lineup. But we'll see if a deal gets done. It's also being rumored that the Twins are going to go hard after a shortstop. They're linked to a Lindor trade. They're linked to a Trevor Story trade. But they're also rumored to be interested in Marcus Semien in free agency. Fantasy-wise, I don't think a move to Minnesota is going to hurt Lindor at all. But it's going to be interesting to see if Story, if he gets traded there, is that going to affect his power numbers playing outside of Colorado? So that's something to watch. The Mets are linked to a trade for third baseman Nolan Arenado. They're linked to everybody, every major player the Mets are linked to this offseason. But I had a conversation last week with Rockies beat writer Patrick Saunders, and he is under the assumption that it's very unlikely we see a deal for Arenado done this offseason, and the same for Trevor Story. And then in other major MLB news, we found out that the White Sox and the Angels are going to be the first Sunday night baseball game of 2021, and I'm really excited for that. I think that should be a great game. Both the Angels and the White Sox should be improved from last year. I really like the moves the White Sox have made this offseason, and we'll talk about them with my guest in a little bit. They should contend again in the AL Central. I'm looking forward to seeing those two teams start off the Sunday night baseball slate. I'll definitely be watching that game. There's also still no word on if the designated hitter will be back in the National League. There's no word on when the start of the season is going to be and if we're going to see seven-inning doubleheaders again. Now, the MLB headquarters has told teams to assume there's no designated hitter in the National League, but it's being reported that a lot of National League teams are ignoring that and are preparing for a designated hitter. Also, the MLB is saying that, you know, hey, we're going to start this season on time, February spring training, everybody get ready. But nothing is official yet. And obviously with the coronavirus, you know, that's going to be up in the air. We'll see. And then, you know, we're also in wait and see mode for the foreseeable future, you know, with all of this stuff for the doubleheaders and everything is kind of up in the air thanks to the coronavirus. So we'll have to wait and see. In a moment, I'm going to share my interview with White Sox beat writer Scott Merkin right after a word from my sponsor. Joining me on the podcast today is Scott Merkin, covering the Chicago White Sox for MLB.com. Scott, thanks for joining me.
Sure, anytime. Happy to be part of the show.
So I want to start with the news that came out today about the White Sox signing Yoelkis Cespedes. What do you know about him as a prospect, and is he MLB ready, or do you think he starts in the minors?
You know, Jesse Sanchez did such a phenomenal job for our company, MLB.com, international-wise, was one of the ones who broke that story today. And I know they've been interested in him. I've heard that for a while. And, you know, he's a very talented kid. I think from what just a little I've heard about him, his skills are a little raw still. So I would be stunned if he doesn't get, you know, let's be hopeful and say there's a full minor league season or pretty close to a full minor league season in 2021. And I would think that he spends probably that whole season or a very good portion of that whole season in the minor leagues. You know, there's no rush. They have guys there. They have Adam Eaton and Wright right now. They have Adam Engel on the bench or, you know, platooning with him, but, you know, both very capable. So, you know, I think they're going to let him develop. You know, the interesting thing is, you know, with some of the, you know, like Jesse and people like James Fox, who does a great job with it at Future Sox, They've talked about they're out of money now in terms of the international period starting January 15th. So one of the other main targets they had, a lot of teams have, but I think the Sox really were honed in on this guy was Oscar Colas. And now the question is, he was declared a free agent today, if I, saw that right. And the question now is, does he sign with someone else or does he wait till the 20 to 2022 period and, maybe come after the Sox? The Sox have a great, for lack of a better word, it's got to be the Cuban connection.
Right.
You start with Minnie Minoso, who is revered in that organization even long after his passing, and rightfully so, just a great guy. I didn't get to know him all that well, but everyone who knew him just loved the man. And then you had Jose Contreras and El Duque on the World Series team in 05, which hit, was a big event in Cuba because these are two guys who were top performers in that country. And then, of course, you had Alexi Ramirez and Dion Viciado. And then you can't say enough about what Jose Abreu means to that team, not just as the most valuable player and 7 years of, all-star level results, but just what he does for that clubhouse, what he does for that team. And I think it's kind of rubbed off on guys like Yoan Moncada and Luis Robert, also Cuban guys. Now, obviously, money talks. Ultimately, no one's going to just go to a team and say, I don't care what the money is if just cause it's a good fit. But I think the players know that players before them who have made that move from Cuba to the United States have thrived in Chicago and not just thrived as players, but really found a home with the White Sox. So it's a good thing. And, they're adding the young pitcher they added to, I think his last name is Vera. Well, I mean, none of this is official, obviously, until January. But I mean,
Right, right, right.
I've heard great things about him too. So, I mean, it's a really, really good class. Marco Patti has done another really nice job with the international class.
And last week that you wrote that, kind of getting into free agency, you wrote that there may be some interest, mutual interest between the White Sox and Liam Hendricks. Do you think a deal is getting done there? And if they lose out on Hendricks, are they going after another one of those top arms out there? Are they comfortable going into the season with what they have in the bullpen?
Well, I'll go on the first part to open with or your question. I think there is mutual interest. I think the Sox have strong interest in Hendricks. Why would you not? I mean,
Right.
I didn't get to watch Hendricks a ton because, he's playing out in Oakland and he's playing a lot of West Coast games. But I watched him in that 3-game wild card series. He didn't pitch in game one because Giolito just, dominated. But in game two, even though he struggled to give up some runs, he still struck out five White Sox and he still threw 50 pitches and then came back the next day. And I believe I'm remembering this right. Closed out the series by striking out the side. And I like Dallas Cal Alex Colome did a really solid job for the Sox. And one of the things that I've stressed with Colome is he was great at guaranteed rate. And that's, any pitcher that's going to play 81 games in one park or whatever the season ends up being in 21 and is effective there, obviously that gives you an edge. But,
Right.
I think Hendricks even puts more of a hammer down in the late innings. So, yeah, and after that game, saw quotes from him where he raved about the White Sox, raved about the great young talent they have, and they're going to be a danger to watch in the American League. So, yeah, there is interest there, but it's not like it's the White Sox and Liam Hendricks negotiating one-on-one and that's it. I mean, there's a lot of teams
Oh,
who
yeah,
want
for sure.
the best closer out there. Now, into your part two, Rick Hahn is a good poker player with the media and just in general, and he rightfully said they have a lot of good young arms right now in the bullpen. They have Aaron Bummer, Cody Hoyer, Garrett Crochet, Evan Marshall's a little older than them, but still a young guy. I mean, Matt Foster, excuse me, Jace Fry. I'm going to list the whole darn unit there before I'm done. But I still
The
think,
talented group.
yeah, and Aaron Bummer is going to be a great closer at some point. But I still think if you're going for it this year, and we've heard the phrase World Series or bust from a couple people, then you want a guy in the ninth inning, and then let Aaron Bummer take the eighth, or let Aaron Bummer, I've used this example 1,000 times, but let Aaron Bummer be Andrew Miller from 2016 with the Indians, and maybe he's the eighth inning one day, maybe another day he's the fourth and fifth inning to get you out of jams, or get you
Right.
some lane. And then you can build the guys around. So to answer your question, and I'll long story short at this point, yeah, I think there's other good options out there, right? I mean, you could bring Colome back. He is very comfortable, with that staff. You could go Blake Treinen. You could go Trevor Rosenthal. There are some good options still that won't, probably, so to speak, break the bank to add into your bullpen there.
And one free agent signing that so I'm a Nats fan, so seeing Adam Eaton
Right.
leave was sad. Where do you think he slots into the Chicago lineup?
How was he viewed in Washington? It seemed like it was a really good fit for him in Washington.
Oh, he was a legend. He was so he was awesome.
That's great.
He was kind of like he had some injuries here, so we didn't, he was out a bit, but man, 2019, he was incredible.
I think that's the worry on him is that, he struggled a little last year, but it was an abbreviated season, obviously. And then he
Correct.
had battled some injuries. So is he slowing down as his career moves on a little bit? But he's a good guy who's got that edge to him that sometimes hits people the wrong way. But I mean, one of the things is that it's 4 years later than when he was here with the Sox last. And as he told me when I talked to him recently, he's the father of two now, happily married father of two. And, just life changes on you. And number two is when he was here in 16, number one, the clubhouse is a little dysfunctional for the Sox. And number two, he was one of kind of the featured guys on that group. He was one of the kind of de facto stars on that team. And now, he still may be very good this year. He may hit 300 and drive in 50 and score 80. Who knows? But he doesn't have to be that guy. He has to be kind of
Right.
a contributing piece to this team with all the great young talent there and Jose Abreu and Yasmani Grandal. So I think it's going to end up being a good fit. I mean, if nothing else, at the very, very least, you have a really solid platoon lefty righty with Eaton and Engel, who both can play, high level defense in right field.
And, as far as the rest of the offense, it seems like a pretty complete team. Do you think the team's going to make any other significant additions on offense, or do you think they're kind of set there?
I think they probably could add another bat that could, place, work some at DH if they don't start the year with Andrew Vaughn, who's their number one prospect and number 13 in baseball per MLB pipeline. And then, if when Vaughn comes up, could move into more of a utility role. They have Zach Collins, who's a draft number one pick from a few years ago behind Yasmani Grandal with James McCann now going to the Mets. So they could, if they want to work Collins in at DH with Vaughn possibly, along with catching, they could add another veteran catcher to that roster. So those are a couple different areas. But I think their main things right now are probably figuring out closer and probably adding another veteran starter into that rotation. And again, a guy who can, start and also maybe move to a longer relief type of thing if and when Michael Kopech is ready to join the team.
And I wanted to ask about Andrew Vaughn too. So it seems like you think we'll see him in 2021. And if we do see him this coming season, what do you think his ceiling is for this season? And then what do you think his ceiling is going beyond?
You said Andrew Vaughn, right?
Andrew Vaughn, yeah.
Yeah, to make sure. Yeah, the interesting thing with Vaughn is like we saw him in Arizona back when we were allowed to, and I'm making a little out of it, but I understand, trust me, people have it a lot worse than not being able to interview players during this horrible, pandemic thing.
Right.
But I remember watching him in those games and thinking, man, this guy is, as polished as some guys who've been around for, a while and with his approach at the plate and the way he handles pitches and everything. But on the flip side, his highest level of at bats is Winston-Salem in the minors, not counting his alternate training facility work in Schaumburg last year. Where you get a lot out of it, but I mean it's different than playing in games. So I wouldn't guarantee he starts the season with the team, but I think there's a pretty good bet that he'll be a big component of that team for most of the year. And I think eventually he's going to move into that first base role. Jose Abreu has this year and 22 on his contract. If he keeps playing like he did last year, then maybe another couple years after that, who knows? But I think Jose understands that after this contract, although he played probably the best defense of his career last year at first base, he's moving more in towards a DH role, and Vaughn is the first baseman of the future. And I mean, just to give you an idea, there's a lot of interest in him at the trade deadline last year when the Sox were trying to add another pitcher, which obviously would have helped at the time because they ended up,
Right.
struggling to find a guy who had the experience or they trusted in game three of the wild card series there. But they weren't moving Vaughn. Vaughn is pretty close to untouchable. They feel that highly about him. So, I think he has the potential to be a consistent offensive presence. Talking, I mean, I don't want to put numbers on the guy because he really hasn't played above, Carolina League so far. But just his approach and his attitude, you see something special about him as a player at a very young age.
And speaking about Jose Abreu, he had an insane 2020. He had been relatively consistent, .300 hitter throughout his career. 2018 missed some time, average kind of dipped, a little bit of a dip in 2019. Did you notice him do anything different this season that kind of like sparked him a little bit? Because he was on pace for like 40 or 50 home runs if this was a full season.
Yeah, maybe I've been around him too much and appreciate all the other stuff he does for the team, but I really would. I mean, 18, you're right. The numbers went down, but that's because he had a couple of like weird maladies that pretty much cost him, I would guess, from like the last week in August all the way through September. So, he didn't play as many games that year. And I think, in 19, he led the American League in RBIs. And I know there's also, I embrace as much as I can the new, not so new now, but the metrics. We have StatCast, Baseball Savant in our company, and it's a great, great tool to put, players in context and teams in context. But I still believe that if RBIs were such an easy thing to get, then everyone would have 95 or 100, right? So, I mean, he had a really good year, I thought, in 19. Maybe didn't hit as well as he could have against righties, but I think coming into this year, he got himself into great shape. He's already in pretty good shape, but I think he got himself into better shape and just was ready to prove something. I think he believes that there were some people, I mean, not believes, he's heard, he knows, he's commented on this, that there were some people who thought maybe he didn't deserve the 3-year deal. Maybe it was, they should have gone year by year. And again, it's just 1 year of the contract, but he's been very consistent for 7 years with the White Sox now, So I just think he did more of what he had been doing. It was just healthy and in great shape and just, with a little chip on his shoulder that maybe wasn't there every year beforehand.
And kind of switching over to pitching, you wrote about how new pitching coach Ethan Katz is already helping Dylan Cease on some improvements to his delivery. What sort of effect do you think he'll have on some of those other young arms in Chicago, Giolito, Lopez, Kopech?
It's a weird dynamic because obviously Don Cooper had phenomenal success in Chicago. I mean, he was there. He's the pitching coach since the middle of the 2002 season. He's the only pitching coach
Wow.
I've known since I've covered the team starting in 03. I think until, they parted ways this year, I think he might have been the longest tenured pitching coach in baseball. And, had a very unique style, very kind of brash in your face, but could also laugh and make jokes. So I don't want to take anything away from what he did because, some of the things we saw in 05, like 4 straight complete games in the playoffs, we'll never see that again. And that was under his watch. But I think Ethan Katz probably has a little more grasp of more of the modern, time. Not saying that Coop was outdated or anything, but I think this is Ethan. He's a younger guy, just more his bailiwick. And I think, he's going to relate to a lot of these guys. And, I know in talking to Dylan, he's already started using this core velocity belt that Lucas Giolito swears by. And it's, I think it helps your lower half in delivery. And that's what Cease said was a big problem for him last year. And he said, if you don't have the lower half working, then, you pretty much don't have a chance when you're pitching. And I give him credit, his ERA was okay. I mean, it was down from the year before. Remember, the kids only pitched 26 start, made 26 starts overall. I mean, a full season in the majors is usually like what, 32 to 34, right? For starts. So he hasn't even pitched a full season, even though he's been in there 2 years. But he flat out said, I didn't like my year. I got to be better. And, he did, walk too many guys and he struggled down the stretch. But I think he's going to benefit a lot from Ethan Katz. And I think a lot of the young guys are. And I think there's a good bit of continuity because Kurt Hassler is still there as the assistant pitching coach. And I know the pitchers relate well to him. So I think the two of them together are going to provide a really good, view for these younger and older pitchers. And of course, to quote like I guess a line from The Sopranos or a phrase, Ethan Katz is kind of a made man already because he's one of the guys who's credited with help turning Lucas Giolito around after his miserable 18 season, only to become one of the better starters in the American League over 19 and 20.
Yeah, and specifically with Giolito, he had the no-hitter this season.
Right.
Do you think that we have seen Giolito's ceiling, or do you think 2019, 2020, that's the tip of the
No,
iceberg?
I think you're just talking to him. He believes there's just more to learn and more to develop. And I think it's just beginning. I mean, I don't know if he's going to become a guy who strikes out, 300 and have a 2.05 ERA, but I think you're only going to see him get better and more comfortable at the top of the White Sox rotation. And I can't stress enough what a great kid he is. And I get that, people following fantasy and baseball, there's no great kid points in the fantasy league. You don't get a,
Right.
it's like when you used to play Sports Illustrated baseball and like, the great home run hitters had like a big one on the card. You don't get like a big eight in fantasy football because, oh, really high quality kid. But I'm saying is a great guy for the Sox to have, along with being a great pitcher. So it's a really good fit. But yeah, I think he's really just getting, I mean, look what he did in that first game against a really solid overall Oakland team. You know, he had a perfect game for six innings in the first playoff game he's ever pitched in his life. So, I mean, pretty darn impressive. I think big things ahead. I don't think there's going to be any drop off, and I think it's only going to keep going up for Lucas.
And do you think we get a Kopech sighting this season? It seems like it's been kind of like one thing or another, keeping him from the majors. And so do you think this is the year where he gets significant time? Is he like the next guy up for if one of the five starters gets hurt?
Well, yeah, I think right now you have Giolito, Keuchel, Lynn, which is a great addition for them, Cease. And then I would think the season starts if they don't add another guy, which I still think they might. Probably Ronaldo Lopez gets a shot at number five right now. Just guessing, but that's just as we're sitting here right now in the end of December with Christmas and New Year's approaching. I can't see how he breaks with the team only because the poor guy hasn't pitched in the majors since, I guess it was 2018, right? It was the start against the Tigers where he struck out six but allowed four home runs and then had Tommy John surgery, I think like 3 days after that. And then, you know, he had every right to opt out last year and he did, and or elect not to play, I guess what it was the proper terminology. And it sounds like from everyone I've talked to that he's ready to come back in 21 and ready to go. And you know, depending on what the minor league situation is, it's a big story for all these guys that are, you know, kind of on the cusp, but like Vaughn and Kopech, maybe even Crochet, you know, depending what that looks like. You know, I think he starts probably in the minors for maybe a month or so and then gets up there and is part of the rotation again. So I think, you know, we saw the last Cactus League game the Sox played in March before the pandemic shut things down was Michael Kopech's return to the mound on a Tuesday afternoon against Texas. And I think he like threw four pitches up to 11 over 100 miles an hour and looked great. Now, granted, it was one Cactus League inning, but you know, the guy's got electric stuff. So it's just a question of getting the maturity, getting the experience, and going from there.
Kind of putting it all together.
Exactly.
And so I got two more questions left for you.
Sure.
The team was aggressive out of the gate acquiring Lance Lynn. What does he bring to the pitching staff?
Yeah, I was just talking to some friends the other day about that. There really isn't many moves, period, overall, right, going into New Year's, is there? It's
No.
you know, usually the MLB office is shut down between Christmas Eve and then the Monday after New Year's. So I guess that would be what, January 3rd this year would be that Monday. So I mean, it's strange that barring something breaking, which it does happen sometimes, barring something breaking in the interim, I mean, really the predominance of the main guys are going to sign in the new year, right? Are going to, you know, move, get traded in the new year if it does happen. But back to your question, I think Lynn is just, you know, La Russa's familiar with him. Tony was talking in a Zoom call yesterday, or I'm sorry, a conference call yesterday about how, you know, he had him pitch in deciding game of World Series against the Rangers. He threw, I think he said the seventh or eighth inning, and I think he said the eighth inning in that game. And he's just a consistent starter who I think they believe, you know, they only got him for 1 year and they traded a very good young pitcher in Dane Dunning. But the Sox are
Right.
now at the stage where it's not as much about the rebuild as it is about winning and winning big. So you got to give up good things to get good things in return, right? But I think they believe, you know, if things go well, that Lynn could be a guy they sign for a longer term. They keep around past this year. But he's a workhorse, he's an excellent pitcher. And it's a reliable guy. And it's not only a guy you can put in at number three and say, okay, now we have three good starters for every series or, you know, whatever series or, you know, the playoffs if we start right now. But it takes pressure off guys like Cease and Kopech and even Lopez, who's been there a little bit, that, you know, they don't have to pressure themselves like we got to be perfect right now because this team's contending. They can say, okay, we got these guys above us. We continue developing and, you know, do what we can to help this team. So I think Lynn was a really solid addition for the White Sox.
And my last question for you is there anybody on the White Sox or in the minors, so pitcher, batter, prospect that you see is like underrated or undervalued that you think might outperform expectations in
Well, I would
2021?
say Garrett Crochet is one. You know, I think he came up and threw what, six innings last year, and he had the second highest total in all of baseball of both pitches at 100 miles an hour above, which is insane. Only the young man from the Dodgers, Gratterall, is that how you pronounce his last name? I think was the only guy above him in 100 mile an hour pitches. So if they decide to use him from the start as a reliever, sort of following the Chris Sale plant, who was a reliever the first 2 years before he became a starter, that I think this guy could really put up big numbers late in games for the White Sox. And I'm really interested to see what Zach Collins can do. You know, Zach Collins has struggled, no doubt about it. You can look at the numbers without me telling you. And I'm if he gets a chance to be, you know, the backup to Yasmani Grandal and also DH from time to time, he's never really had, like, except maybe one September a couple of years ago, never really had a consistent stretch where he just had it bad after it bad after it bad to get better. So I'd be interested to see what he is going to do. And I think, you know, the one guy, he's not unknown, but Yoan Moncada going into the season has had, you know, two kind of subpar seasons and one MVP worthy season in 2019. Now, granted, last year, you know, he tested positive for COVID in the intake process and said he never really got his legs under him until like the last week. It never really felt, not forget his legs, just never felt right until the last week of the season. So you would think a healthy Moncada is going to be a good Moncada, but I think he's a key guy to them, you know, being them being a contender. And one more name that's a little further off, probably, you know, probably 2 years on the line, is a young pitcher they drafted a couple years ago named Andrew Dahlquist, who the team is really high on. So I think, you know, keep an eye on him for the future.
All right, Scott, thanks for talking to me today, sharing your insight. I really appreciate your time. Take care and happy holidays.
Thanks for having me, and a happy holidays to you too.
Make sure to subscribe to the podcast on whichever platform you're using. That way you'll be notified when each new episode is published through the rest of the off season. I'll be back with a new episode on Wednesday, January 6th, with a few more interviews and hopefully some more big news. Also, please give the show a 5-star rating. Each high rating helps to move my podcasts up the list on the different platforms when people search for fantasy baseball, so it's really helpful to me. I'm also on Instagram at Fastball Fantasy Baseball and on Twitter at Fastball Pod. I'll be posting on Twitter as much as I can with daily info and updates. So make sure to follow me on social media. You can also feel free to email the show at fastballfantasybaseball@gmail.com. I'll take questions, whatever you guys want to ask. I'm posting on Twitter pretty regularly. I'm good about answering emails, so feel free to reach out. Thanks for listening.